Thank you, Alden, for that. And yeah, that was surprising and totally unexpected to know somebody with that connection. Because usually when I say Riverside or UC Riverside, people kind of sneer and give me like, "Oh man, stay away." Those inland people from LA and Southern California too. But yes, Olmsted Hall was one of the places that I used to love hanging out in. It's a beautiful old mid-century building that your family name is on, and I had multiple classes in there. I studied history and classics in college, and I thought about leaving UCR because I became a believer when I was a freshman in college, and I thought, I need to get out of here. This University of California, it's like crazy. And I was encouraged by my pastor at the time to stick around. I had a scholarship, so he's like, just deal with it. And I'm so glad I did because I grew there, learned so much about my faith. Some of my closest friends to this day graduated with me there. I met my wife at UCR, got involved with Campus Crusade for Christ. So I have so much civic pride for now Riverside, where I'm from, that area, a little country town called Nuevo, but also UCR. You'll see it on my bumper stickers, like I wear it proudly. So glad to know you, Olmsted family. And Soma, good morning. It's so good to be back with you. Can you believe it's been 3 years since I was here last time? Does it feel like three? No, it doesn't. I will tell you though, Luther shows me how it's been 3 years. When I walked up, he's taller than me now. My kids as well, they're bigger. Christian is going to the junior college over here. He's 18 and, he's got two jobs. And Jonathan, his brother, just turned 16 and he's driving as of starting this week. Look out, everybody. And then Evangeline, my youngest, Jolene and I love her. She's such good news. She just loves God. It's amazing to watch her faith at 12 years old, sixth grade, and she's also just doing amazing. So I have such a fond memory of being here with you all in the time that was short time that we had. I came to you having left my ministry in Healdsburg. I was part of Grace Community Church in Healdsburg. We moved up there in 2017 from Southern California. The fires happened. It was chaotic. And after 5 years of serving there, I was like, God's probably going to move us out. And we were looking outward. You guys remember the story, right? And God kept us here. But in the meantime, while I was kind of searching, God allowed me the privilege of being alongside of you and being with Paul. I learned something about that experience of just, it was like a brief window of time when I was kind of here working with Paul. It's not good to do ministry by yourself. As a solo pastor up there in Healdsburg, I realized like it's so good to be on a team. And he and I are like kindred spirits. We see things similarly. We both went to Talbot. We have kind of the same spiritual pedigree. We have the same values, and there's a lot of similarities. And so I learned that, and how blessed you are to have a pastor like him. He's the one who actually introduced me to the people over in Occidental. He didn't have to do that. He's kingdom-minded. He didn't have to do that. He could have said, "No, I don't know anything about that group of people. You're staying right in here," right? But he's got a bigger picture, and that really is the heart of the whole reason why we wanted to do this thing today. We had been talking about it from the moment I arrived over there in October of 2000, whenever it was, two. And let's do not a wife swap, a pastor swap, right? Did we get that? A pastor swap, pulpit swap. And so he right now is preaching with our church in Occidental. And we had no other motivation to do this but to demonstrate, number one, that we're kind of in tandem in ministry here. We aren't alone. There is a bigger picture. And there and support each other, those two things. So I wanted our congregation to feel that as well, as we're kind of an outlier out there in Occidental, West County. Like, what happens over there? It's like different from Santa Rosa. It's just unique. And I wanted our congregation to also see that we're a part, even though we're out there, of a bigger movement of churches here in Sonoma County. And, it's not just about our local expression. Sometimes we need that bigger picture. Just be reminded that we belong to a bigger family. And truly, I see you as family. And that's how God designed us. I love that we sang about that this morning. We're children of God. So I hope that he's enjoying it. I know that they are introducing him with a picture that didn't work for me here. I'll tell you why. But there's a picture of he and I out in the parking lot on his birthday. He's wearing 49ers. My church is going to love that because finally somebody repping the right team. They're going to say, "You can't leave, Pastor Paul." But the picture is, I think it was on his birthday, right? His 49th birthday. We had a big party in the parking lot for him. 49ers. And then I was wearing my Dodger hat with my LA chain in the picture. And I tried to get it loaded for you, but Paul must have been praying over the sanctuary. And like, it didn't work. We couldn't get it loaded. So you have to use your mind's eye, right? And you probably, anyway. So I'll just leave it at that. Okay, I won't go into too much gloating there. But I, in our church, I'm excited to kind of give you a little window of what we've been talking about on Sunday mornings. We are currently in the Gospel of Matthew. And I know that Paul has gone over Matthew with you in the past as well. One thing that I, coming back to it this time, of reading Matthew's storytelling of the narrative of Jesus' life and ministry, is that he organizes his gospel around five sermons, discourses, that Jesus taught to the crowds and his disciples. And so the whole narrative of Gospels Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew kind of flows through these five sermons. Obviously, the first one is the foundations of the kingdom of heaven, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, the greatest sermon ever preached there early in Matthew's gospel, chapters 5 through 7. And then the second one, he's preaching to his disciples, right? And he's teaching them about mission, that you should expect persecution as you live and follow me, as you have a faith. It's not going to be easy. So he teaches there in later chapter 9 and into chapter 10 about mission. Today, I want to introduce you to the third kind of area where Jesus is teaching his discourses. It's on parables. And in this sermon, he, as we read, pick it up, if you have a Bible, you can turn there in Matthew chapter 13. He picks up and he's speaking to these crowds of people in parables. And you know, parables are these stories that utilize things that were common to life that their his audiences would have identified with. And they teach a spiritual lesson about the kingdom. Right, and so what's interesting about this one, I kind of want you to file this in the back of your mind. When we get into what this parable is going to be about, it's the parable of the weeds. It's also known as the parable of the wheat and the tares. Why teach to a kingdom of God people a parable? Why not say things plainly about the kingdom of God? Why use these story pictures and these you know images to talk about complex things? Who's Jesus talking to? He's talking to the crowds only. I want you to remember that because the other discourses, they are to the disciples. This is the only one out of the five that's addressed uniquely to the crowds. Why is that? Why? And why? These are questions I want you to think of. And why are you speaking in parables? It actually becomes the question that his disciples later, after they hear his lessons, like, why are you teaching them in parables? Why are you not telling them plainly the things of the kingdom of heaven? Why are you doing it this way? Why are you teaching this kind of, using this method, right? And sometimes, you know, maybe that's a question you have as you're trying to sit and listen to the word of God. Why is God speaking this way? Well, let's read this parable. Matthew chapter 13, verses 24 through 30, and then I'll jump to 36 and 43. Jesus put another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore a grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, 'Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' So the servant said to him, 'Then do you want us to go and gather them?' But he said, 'No, lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.' Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field.' He answered, 'The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. And when you lose your place, you can just go up here. I forgot that this was up here, by the way. And throw them into the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. Let me start at 41. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of the kingdom all causes of sin and lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. Shine light. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. So the beginning of this parable gives us this scene. Let me explain it. This scene that is so ideal. It's a parable of this field, and it's got just this promising future. It's fertile land. This farmer has his tendencies. They all spread the seed out, and it just looks like it's going to produce something that is going to be amazing and great. They're watering it. They're nurturing it. It's going to be amazing. And, you know, this is kind of the setting the stage of what everybody kind of would relate with in their agrarian society, right? This field is representative of what they all would see, because it's like a pantry. In their day and age, they didn't have, you know, the grocery stores that like we do, and the supermarkets, and a lot of their food and the way that they would sustain themselves had to happen in the backyard. It had to happen on your land. And so ideally, you've got this great scene everybody would relate with. Yeah, this man is going to plant his seeds. He's got his workers there helping him, and they're giving it the best care because this is to sustain them. This is for their daily bread. But then as time passes, you recognize, even though it has such an ideal, you know, ability, potential to become like a great harvest at some point in the future, they recognize as it's starting to grow up that there's a problem. While the workers were sleeping, so apparently they're the security guards as well, there was a neighbor, an enemy, who decides to come into this land and sow, I guess you could say discord in some sense, but sows weeds. To sabotage, this is malicious intent here, to sabotage this man's field. Now, we don't know why. We're not told the backdrop of, you know, the gossip. We don't spill the tea on, like, how do we get to this bad relations between neighbors where this guy wants to come in and totally disrupt this man's bread pantry. But the fact of the matter is that they continue to water it and grow it, and it's not until later that they recognize, uh-oh, we got a problem. We have weeds in the mix. What this demonstrates first and foremost, as we even just move setting the stage of this wonderful potential, this field that could produce amazing, beautiful things, this harvest, is that as noble as you are with these ideas of wanting to follow God and the vision to follow God and have faith in that, there's going to be pressure that pushes against you. There's going to be an enemy who wants to kind of thwart what's happening. The enemy will try to sabotage God's good work. And sometimes we don't know why. Sometimes we don't know why hard things are happening, but it springs up like a weed in your life. It's a pressure. And so naturally, the workers, they come to the man, to the owner, and they say, would you have us rip it all up and start over? Doesn't that make sense? If you get weeds in your home, in your yard, that you would just, oh man, if they start to overtake and they're invasive, you just want to rip them up. And by the way, I guess the definition of a weed is anything that's growing where you don't want to grow it. And so why is it always easier to grow weeds? I don't know why that is. You don't. But the man does something that you don't expect. And this is often what Jesus' parables do. He teaches something that is counter natural. It is something that you don't expect. It surprises you. And so instead of ripping up, naturally, like, that makes sense. Let's rip it up, start over. We gotta have good wheat for making bread, you know, for our harvest. He says, leave it there. Let them grow up together. They think that this weed was the bearded darnel, is the name of the weed. You'll look that up. Bearded darnel. Here's a side-by-side of those two kinds of cultivars. So you've got the wheat on the left, and the tare, the weed on the right. Can you really see the difference? It's really hard. You kind of can. But the only way that you'd be able to tell the difference is over time. Eventually, when that weed gets older than you see, it becomes actually toxic, and supposedly it chokes out, can be even poisonous. So you don't want to consume it. So clearly this enemy was really trying to do some sabotage. Like, this is This is terrible that this would have happened. And the audience, in hearing that, they would have been like, oh, that's, you know, that would have stirred something up in them. Like, that's a terrible neighbor. Who would do that? This was something that was happening in the Roman world because there were laws where you could be prosecuted if you were found, if there was evidence suggesting that you did something like this. And there are recordings of cases where some were ruled in favor of, like, against their neighbor because they sabotage your land. So the audience is like, yeah, we get this. But you tell this point about the fact that we're supposed to let it grow. That part we don't get. We don't know the motive. So how does God, so I want to say it like this. When something challenging happens, you're following your faith, you're living your life, you're doing what you believe God's called you to do, and it seems like there's some pressure against you. Why should we be surprised by that? And how do you respond? Sometimes when there's pressures in your life and you're uncomfortable, you want to rip those things out of your life and say that, you know, it's terrible, it's wrong, it's bad. But here, God is saying, let it all grow together. That's how he's responding. That's a little bit harder for us to kind of proceed forward with. And that really is kind of the next point, is God's people, we're going to grow up among the weeds. And we don't know right off the bat from external facades and outward appearances what exactly is a weed and what is actually valuable in wheat. We don't always know. Sort of the point of the story that Jesus is getting to is that we are living in a world alongside of those things, people and ideas and situations that are not about the kingdom of heaven, that do not represent the culture of heaven. Now, by the way, before I jump more into this, there is a segment of people who interpret the field here as the church. So specifically when we're talking about the weeds and the wheat, there are some that say that this is referring to the church, the gathering of people who are coming around to learn of Jesus, sort of like the crowd, I guess. And not everybody who sits in the pews is a Christian. And so some would say that this is basically telling the Christians, like, make sure that you fall in line because, you know, God sees you. You can't fake it, right? I don't think that this is referring to the field as specifically the church for two reasons. Because the next discourse in Matthew 18 is about community relations in the church and how you have discipline in the church and what to do with believers who maybe are not following the Lord. There's a process that Jesus talks about. And so I guess you could say that's kind of like a weeding, if you will. Maybe this is not really talking about the church in that way because you have Matthew 18. But also, Jesus plainly says here, the field is the world. So I think what we can carry this out to say is, for you, for me, the believer who lives in the world, as the kingdom of heaven is invading, you're going to feel the difference between the light in your heart, in your life, the light of Christ in your life, and the culture around you. And isn't our response to that to be kind of separatistic? Isn't our first response to a world that's different from our beliefs to just create our isolated groupings so we never get infected with the sin and the things, the weeds of the world? That, I know, it's uncomfortable, but this seems to be the reality of what Jesus is teaching, is that, you know, this man is like God. He's saying, he even says it's the Son of Man. Let the weeds grow up with the wheat. Let it grow together. What is that telling me? It's saying that we don't know what's a weed and what's wheat per se. Now, maybe in time you can see the fruit, but in right now, in the moment, how much do we really know about what God's doing in somebody's heart, in someone's life? What if you're next to a weed in your life that God is actually growing up and nurturing and it's going to one day be reaped as wheat? You don't know. We only see outward appearances, but God sees the inside of our lives. So when we first moved to Healdsburg, you know, this kind of hit us. It's a small town, and when we moved into the house that we live in now, we think sabotage happened. And in our town, we were told that people are not necessarily open to faith, and word travels in a small town. Everybody kind of knew who we were, even though we didn't know them. And one morning I wake up and there's this wonderful ornamental shrub in our front yard, and it starts to have a little brown leaf growing out of it. A beautiful shrub that was covering the whole below the front window. And this brown leaf started to turn even more and then it started turning dead, more brown and more brown, and it started spreading. Somebody came pretty soon, that whole thing died. And it sort of felt like this. Somebody came over here and sabotaged my yard. And if you look at my yard now, it looks terrible. It looks horrible. And as I was looking at it, this is even worse because this is like somebody's breadbasket. This is just for looks at my house. But clearly there's like something hostile against what's happening. I think somebody came and poured poison on it. Because it was one little spot and then it spread to death, right? It's a reminder, it's literally a tangible reminder, I'm growing up among the weeds. So I have two choices, close the doors, everybody stay away from me, get out of my yard, get off my lawn, or I can recognize that God has allowed more time for people to turn to him so that we can discern, are they to be reaped as the wheat? Are there people? Here's the thing. We had today here. Today is the day of salvation because God is allowing more time because there's somebody out there who hasn't met Jesus yet. And he's not done working on us who already know him. I am so grateful that God has given me more time to grow up, right? Whereas it's better for all of us that he doesn't rip it all out now, like the common sense would say. Do the weeding, right? So what to do about this? Therefore, there's a few things. I'm reminded of Jeremiah when he says, seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf. For its welfare, in its welfare, you will find your welfare. We remember that. If we love on the place in which we've been planted and where we live, and indiscriminately, it will come back to us. And we don't do it for that reason, but this is an encouragement to remind ourselves that when these things thrive around us, God's nurturing all of it, we will thrive as well. Three things to remember about this. It may not be immediately evident if someone is a believer or not, so be slow to judge others. Now, I looked this up. Did you know that first impressions, they happen so quickly? Your first impression of somebody, you know how fast it happens? Now, I thought it was like a few seconds, and it can be. You know, I think the maximum is 7 seconds. That's how long it takes for somebody to get a first impression of someone that you don't know. But the average, I just looked this up. Do you know what it is? 1/10 of a second. You don't even have time to say a word before you've passed judgment on somebody. So that tells me we're just using these. We're just thinking that's a weed or it's wheat. We make quick, that's like this fast decisions. The fact that this didn't get rooted up and replanted, it says, be slow to judge. This is what it signals to me. Right? Let it grow up together. Be slow to judge others. You don't know what God is doing. First impressions are not always accurate. And aren't you glad? I also have not met the future Daniel Flores. So someone's impression of me today may differ from what they meet as I grow closer to Jesus, God willing, in the time, you know, however much time God allows. So be slow to judge. Secondly, give people the benefit of the doubt. This one is pointed right here for me. Why is it that sometimes when we are around other people, we want to assume, you know, almost the worst? And you know what? That comes from a lot of different things. Maybe from disappointments of our past. Maybe, we have good reasons to not be trusting of others. And, you know, we've got things that we've experienced that are damages to our life. So we've learned some defense coping skills, and we are, you know, kind of stay away from it. We kind of create barriers around ourselves, right? But give people the benefit of the doubt. You know, assume that maybe what you're looking at in someone could be the potential of what God's reaping as a harvest. How do you know what God's doing in that person? So give them the benefit of the doubt. Give them time. What could God do? And then third, Since we're surrounded by such a mix of people, how about we ask God to help us avoid unnecessary tribalism? Again, because we want to be together with other wheat, right? We want to eliminate the negative. We get into holy huddles. We create fortresses. We do everything separately. And we should avoid some unnecessary tribalism. I don't want to say that doing small groups and being together, you know, in our affinity groups, that's not a bad thing. But we should also at the same time be open for change and who God might bring into the mix and how God might change even the hardest person and bring them close to Christ. You know, in the time that we've been in Occidental, we definitely have seen, even though it's a beautiful place, that we're growing among the weeds a little bit. And this lesson has helped to change me how I'm looking at the people who are around us, literally the neighbors that live right next to the church. The church there in Occidental, the building was built in 1876. It is one of those old, idyllic, beautiful chapels, right? And it was the first building in town, and it's built on Church Street. Everything was built around it. That's how they did towns back in the day. And so our next door neighbor who's behind us and the neighbors two across the street, you know, they're all close, but you can tell when you look at a map that none of these are matching exactly what the maps say. When you look at parcel maps, you know, and then you look at what you actually have, you're like, something's not right here. So about a year ago, we had been growing, and there's this wonderful thing that the church does. They eat every Sunday, but the church is old. It's small. There's not enough space for us to gather and eat and fellowship after service. Like your sardines in the back, you know, in the kitchen, is kind of uncomfortable. We're breathing on each other and coughing and getting sick, and you know, but they love each other. You know, they still love each other. Then there's this beautiful back deck that they had, or kind of parts of it were potential for good, but it was good outdoor patio space in the back of the church where we could have meals, but it needed to be doubled in size. We thought a little bit of land, there's a fence back there, we could build this deck and make it twice the size of what it is, and then we all will spill out onto the deck and have our meals there and breathe the fresh air. You got the pine tree, you know, you got the trees around, it's wonderful, right? So we started doing work parties, we did fundraiser to get all the materials to do this, and last year in August, the church raised the money for it. We started putting all the guys out, getting stuff moved, demoing the old deck. And the first day we get out there, one of the neighbors comes by and says, you must halt and stop because you don't have a permit. And we're like, wait, this is like the church's land. What are you talking about? Who are you? And you're building that on where your plans are. Looks like it's going to go onto my property. And so literally, we had to full stop. I got a cease and desist letter. You will stop or I'll sue, that type of thing. And so then we tried to be good neighbors and work with our neighbor. And we're still, you know, trying to do that. And this neighbor just did not want to work with us at all. And so the wood sat out there while we were kind of in a holding pattern for a year. Talk about waiting as you grow up among the weeds. Just wait, right? And so finally we're like, we just need to go get a survey done. And it turns out, like, not only did we have complete clearance to build this deck on our side, but she actually lost the land that she thought was all hers. So it actually didn't go well, right? And we weren't trying to be spiteful or anything. It was like, we want to be good neighbors. So here's actually where the stakes are. Here's the property lines. And it's bigger than you thought. And by the way, like the church actually, it's funny. A lot of it doesn't match the mapping. It's old school, right? It's hilarious. But we know for sure where our property lines are. And so we started building more of the deck. And it's in process right now. We hope to finish it like in 2 weeks. And so that way, if you want to come eat a meal with us, you know, maybe we do that, that'd be fun. We all kind of combine churches, and that'd be cool. But the point being, God has been changing even my heart reading a story like this, because I don't know what God's doing in our neighbor's heart. And it would be really easy for me to treat a neighbor who's been kind of malicious towards you or acting that way to just be like standoffish, closed doors, you know, we're a church, but you stay on your side of the fence, we'll stay on ours. No. Our church, still looking at this this neighbor as somebody of value to God, praying for her, and still being cordial and nice, and do you need help over there? Are there things that we can do? And we pray for you, even though you wanted to sue us, and you stopped us. We stopped for a year up among them, thinking about all the ministry that could have happened back there. So the point of this is, if we grow up among the weeds, is be patient, be slow to judge, and remember that God gave us more time another day for also you to grow up and for you to be worked on and for him to grow closer to you as well. Just like the person who maybe is looking like a weed, you don't know. Maybe they're not. What we can't say for sure is that the future, this text tells us the future for God's people looks bright. In the last part of this passage, it talks about the return of Jesus. And in the return, we're all waiting for that. That day's coming. And when that day comes, what gets reaped first? Did you notice? The weeds got reaped first. Pulled out the bad stuff first. Right? There's some judgment happening there. And you see this great cosmic scene of how it's happening with the angels and all of that. And we shall shine like the sun. It may seem like you're lumped in with the rest of it, that because, you know, we live in the world among the weeds, that we're weeds too. And maybe you're beating yourself up like that. You know, what's the point? And you get discouraged. But in the end, our future looks bright because it becomes evident in the end when justice hits who belongs to Jesus. So it may feel unjust for a time and kind of chaotic for a time, but in the end, we will see and our future looks bright. So right now, thank the Lord that he's allowing more time for more people to learn of him, to come to him, and for you. There's a family that has come to our church, and in this last year, the mom, well, the daughter started coming. She's in high school, and then she started inviting her sister, and then the mom started coming, and then the dad started coming, and now all four of them, they came to faith in Jesus. It was all God's working on their life. And they, all four as a family, got baptized this year. You know, a year ago, when I talked to this man, amazing family, he's like, I wouldn't have stepped foot through a church door. And now this year, it's like, I'm looking forward to all of this, like Christmas time, and it's like, I get it now, my eyes are open, and I can't imagine what it's like to not know this, like, and he's growing, and the whole family is growing. They love the Lord. I can't imagine if in my complaining last year about my neighbor and all this, you know, the stuff happening, it's like, just God, come. Let it all burn. You know, it's all just, you know, it's going to fail anyway. Just would you come now and just get rid of it? This family is now part of our family. God was waiting for them. And you know what? It's today, even though we had, you know, we got an hour time change. More time. Kind of. We have more time because there's somebody that we need to be praying for that needs to see the real Jesus and have him be revealed to them. And maybe it's through you, where you live, in your neighborhood, with the people around you. That's the reason we'll return, because the end is going to come. The age that the clock is ticking. Jesus will return. So thank God that we have more time. I can't imagine. There's somebody that's going to be next to us. And maybe there's people in your life right now that you've been praying for a while, and the harvest might come for them. And you're going to say, wow, doesn't God do good things? He can get through to anybody. Do you believe that? I've seen God work miracles like that, where he changes people's lives. All along, we were judging the outside, but God saw the inside. He didn't give up. And he works. So an encouragement to us, you know, let us continue to be holding one another up and encouraging each other while we wait for the return, but also let the love of Christ spread out and let's get messy with the weeds. I know I don't like weeds either. And by the way, I am from a little town called Nuevo. The weeds here are way prettier than the weeds in the desert where I'm from, in Riverside County. The weeds where I'm from, you know what they grow up into? Worse than this. Prickly tumbleweeds. So right around this time, you know, when everything's real dead, you get a good windstorm, and everybody starts building the snowmen with tumbleweeds. It's terrible, but they make great bonfires one day. You know, you burn them up. Talk about fiery furnace. Like, it's tumbleweed season when it all burns, right? So, at just the right time, justice will be served. The Lord will have his way. And in the meantime, we trust him and he will be with us. Remember what he said? At the end of Matthew, I will never leave you. He's continuing to nurture us, to water us. He won't forsake us. So just remember, there will be attacks against the good work that God has started in your life, against the things that, you know, the church is doing, God's movement. There will be attacks against it, but God has a plan. So hang in there. And continue to grow up among the weeds by seeking the welfare of where God has planted you. And our future looks bright. Don't forget it. Our future looks bright. Thank you for worship this morning because it reminds me of a future that we get to do that together. It's a bright one. There's joy involved. It's fulfilling our purpose. It's in the enjoyment of God. I felt that this morning. It was a taste of heaven. And I can't wait to be surprised with you about who's going to join us that we never would have imagined God could get a hold of, and he will. So pray for them. And if there's family members or friends that you have in your life that you're kind of losing hope, don't lose hope. Keep praying for them. Especially think of the parents who have adult children who walk away from the faith or walk away, if you will. Keep praying for them. They mean more to God than even they mean to us. Imagine that. His love is incredible. So I want to shift now to communion because you all, it's our first Sunday, right? And we take communion. And as we move into communion, if you were to have read that passage in its entirety, that little section I skipped when Jesus is talking about parables, why talk about parables? Well, because it's written to the whole point. By the way, the disciples, well, it is, why are you not telling them plainly, the crowds? And Jesus says, well, it has been given to you to know the kingdom. It's because you don't know whose weeds yet. God will work on them. And then he tells this other parable about the kingdom, and it's like a mustard seed. It's this little thing, but it can grow something that gets incredibly massive. You can go back and read that part, right? When we take communion today, I think about that when I hold these elements. It's like a mustard seed. When I first started coming around churches and I just looked at these two little things, you have this, and in some churches they use like saltines that are like old and just a little bit kind of stale, you know? And then this little cup, and yet it just seems so, you know, small. And what are we saying? Like, and it's kind of strange, right? If you've never been part of church and you were to hold these in your hand, like, why are we... You know, the Costco samples are kind of more substantial. When you walk through and you get your free samples. But so what's the deal with these little things? So you're kind of learning that for the first time. And just to realize it matches kind of the symbolism of what Jesus is talking about in these parables, is that these small things, a little bit of faith, produces something that's so powerful and big in your life. So today, I'm going to read again Jesus' words, the Last Supper. And you, church, we are the wheat. And he is our daily bread. And he's handing that into your hand. And what you have in your hand may seem like this insignificant little thing, like a mustard seed. But this is going to grow forth and sustain you, take care of you. It is your daily bread and your nourishment. You don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Don't worry about it. But tomorrow he'll give you more daily bread to nourish you. So I want to have our Joe, you're going to help me out, pass out the elements. As these are passed out, I want you to be praying to God. Hold on to both elements. And you want to be thinking about what do you need from God in terms of your faith. It may seem small, but God's going to meet you right there. And we're confessing our doubts. We're confessing our frailties. We're confessing our need for forgiveness. We're confessing our hopes. We're praying for others, and we're communing with God. It's a powerful thing that is about to happen as you hold on to these elements, these small things. You're going to commune as one with God, our Creator. And we're doing it together, so we commune together. We're standing in solidarity together as we partake these things. Lord, sustain us and nourish us. So take these moments. Let's pass out both elements now. I'm going to read while they're passing it out from Jesus. And just take your heart before God to pray about all these things. Jesus. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul writes, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way also he took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Eat this, do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes."